Come on, man. You got Larry June in the building. You listen to the Morning Roast, and we're doing numbers, man. Good job, Morning Roast. Sock it to me. Hey, 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 hey. Yee!
Oh, thanks, Larry. Oh, my goodness. Final hour here on the Morning Roast. Evan Giddings in for Joe Spadoni with Joe Shasky. Spadoni's going to be back tomorrow.
Lubman will be back next week.
Yeah, so wait, where is he right now?
He's in Inverness, which is an area in the North Bay.
It sounds like a place in central Canada. Like,
hey, I'm Lubman. I'm going to be at Freeman's and Plyce's this Saturday with Mark Grant.
Was that Phil Moe's impression of
yes.
Sam?
Yes.
Oh, that's pretty good. That's pretty good.
All right, this or that. All right, let's get to this or that, because you asked about the swing off, speaking of Sam Lubman.
Yeah, we're
Carter, I got the drop. Don't worry, I'm going to do it.
Oh, you're good.
And now he's got fingers up.
All right, so the this or that. Carter set it up before the break. Here it is. In honor of the swing off guest today, you like it? Don't really care at this point. It happened. Aaron Judge or Shohei Ohtani? This or that?
All right, I'm going to take Shohei Ohtani, even though he's a Dodger, and I hate the Dodgers. But right now, I hate Aaron Judge even more just because of what he did to the Giants. And I'm super pissed that Logan Webb didn't put one in between the nines on his back.
You said something wild in the break.
What do you mean wild? I said it for 3 weeks before the season started. I said, if you pitch to this guy, Aaron Judge, after what he did to you in free agency, where he jumped out of a moving car and basically played the Giants, because I have some very intimate knowledge about how that went down. He played the Giants like a fiddle. All right. And he used them to squeeze $50 million out of the Yankees. He was full of it. He was never going to come here. He used us and he postured the entire time. And I thought Logan Webb, on behalf of the entire organization in the region, should have plunked them in his back with whatever, 92 in the back. And instead, he threw one right down the pipe and he had a home run. So I hate him. So no, I'm not taking Aaron Judge. I'm going to take Ohtani.
I'm taking Aaron Judge. I'm taking the guy who has the most power in baseball. I've also seen him in a home run derby. I've seen Ohtani live. Very pull heavy. Was in Colorado 2021. Shohei Ohtani is an awesome home run hitter.
Can you pick up that name you just dropped?
Shohei Ohtani?
No, you in the All-Star Game 2021. We got cleanup, aisle one.
I've actually been to two derbies live.
Oh,
so there's two drops. 2019 in Cleveland was Pete Alonso's first.
Uh-huh.
It was a swing off. Love these. Between Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Jock Peterson.
Okay, nice.
Before he was on the Giants.
Yeah.
And it was awesome. Great experience. Colorado was even better. Guys were just hitting balls all over the field. But Ohtani was in it. Not as impressive. Aaron Judge is like, I know you hate the guy, but he is, to me, the best home run hitter in baseball. Honestly, second is the guy that plugged three last night would be Kyle Schwarber. Those would be my 1-2. Ohtani is a close third. So this or that, I'm taking Aaron Judge. You'll take Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm not taking Aaron Judge at all. I'm so out on him.
He's out on arson, out on Aaron. All right, speaking of Aaron's, our next topic on the Bay Area sports topics of the 21st century chart, our other bracket, so to speak, Aaron Rodgers or Alex Smith. Now, this one, I'm going to let you dive into how this came to be, because to me, I wasn't around for this particular topic. And I'm assuming it's revolving around the 2005 NFL draft.
It is, but it's also just like their whole careers and how we kind of like line the two up against each other. Like, I remember when Mike Nolan took over, it was insane. He was the defensive position coach underneath Marvin Lewis with the Ravens. And everyone for the Ravens was getting hired all over the place. And Mike Nolan, whose dad, Dick Nolan, was a Niner coach in the early 70s, known for gaffing away some playoff games to the Dallas Cowboys. They were up two scores with like 4 or 5 minutes to go. Onside kick. Niners miss it. Cowboys end up recovering it. They win. It's a very famous moment in Niner history where they had lost 3 years in a row to the Dallas Cowboys, the 69, 70, 71 seasons. First ever NFC Championship game at Kezar. Anyway, point being is they hire Mike Nolan. He was ill. He was not a head coach. He had no personnel background whatsoever. And at the time, the trendy move was bringing in like a Mike Holmgren, and Seattle was going to name him GM and head coach because he had left Green Bay. And they wanted to give the job to Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll wanted no part of it. Bill Walsh basically told Pete Carroll, don't touch that job. Don't go working for them. And so Pete Carroll kind of like did a 42 fake and fake like he was going to go. Matt Leinart was supposed to come out that year. I don't know if you remember. He went back for his senior year. So they give Mike Nolan the job, and they say, hey, draft whoever you want. Aaron Rodgers was in our backyard playing at Cal and beat those USC teams. Well, one time. Yeah. And had a completion
needed to beat
record.
Him one more time.
He should have beat him the second time. Everybody wanted Aaron Rodgers. He was the local guy. He was from Northern California, Chico, Humboldt, whatever you want to call it. Played at Cal. Everyone wanted him. And Mike Nolan didn't draft him because Alex Smith was a nice guy and opened the door for his mom. That was like one of the many things that he said after the draft combine and after everything that was just insane. I remember they drafted him, and the fourth overall pick was John Gruden. I believe they took Cadillac Williams. This is off the top of my head. John Gruden was making it out like, I might take Aaron Rodgers 4 overall. They might have had Chris Sims at the time, but he was a quarterback crazy. He had Garcia, Sims, he had a bunch of guys. And they were trying to dupe the Niners into trading back into the top five to take a second quarterback. That's how bad the Niners were at that time in terms of front office, because Mike Nolan was running things. They had no GM. He was the GM and the head coach. Again, making an offensive selection when his entire career was spent on the defensive side of the ball. It's insane, quite frankly.
Now, Rodgers, he ended up getting drafted like 25th, right?
Yes.
At the end of the first round by the Packers.
He waited and waited and waited and waited and waited. But also, you have to remember, and this is the part that gets lost in history, Alex Smith, before taking a snap in football, was given a $55 million guaranteed contract deal. At the time, there was no slotted contracts.
Yep.
And so when you took a guy, you didn't know how much they were going to hold out for, and he instantly became the highest paid player on your team.
Mm-hmm.
So
Sam Bradford.
So people weren't taking quarterbacks like they are now. It's just totally different. We didn't value the quarterback position the way we do now. I think as soon as it's modern day, Aaron Rodgers clearly goes in the top five. I mean, we're overvaluing quarterbacks nowadays. I mean, we're drafting probably too many in the first round. But because of the financial value that's involved in having a quarterback on a rookie deal. So, yeah, he dropped a lot. And a lot of teams made terrible decisions on that. And this is also, we had two running backs from the same school go in the top five. So think of how different the draft was back then. Ronnie Brown and Cadillac Williams went in the top five in the same draft. That's insane.
That was pretty crazy. Running backs don't even get taken, it feels like, in the top 10.
So
top 15.
So when I hear people say, like, oh, well, Aaron Rodgers fell to 24th, anyone could. Dude, the times were so different. It was Aaron or Alex. And I listened for years as boobs on other stations defended Alex Smith. He wasn't as good as Aaron Rodgers. It's okay. Like, we all like Alex. We root for him. He wasn't as good. And there was no universe. There was no universe, even with the ineptitude of the 49er organization at the time, which we all know was inept. There was no universe where Alex Smith was going to be a better football player coming out than Aaron Rodgers. He came out of the shotgun with Reggie Bush in San Diego and the shotgun in Utah, where he had never taken a snap under center in his entire high school or college career.
Sounds like he plays college football in 2025. I mean, he's just spread him five wide and put the quarterback in shotgun and let him rip. The issue is, obviously, Alex Smith was not a bad quarterback. He helped you do some things, didn't help you get over the top. Obviously, the biggest regret is...
He had one and a half good years.
Well, I don't know how you feel about this. You draft Aaron Rodgers, you win a Super Bowl.
Well,
like the 49ers would have won a Super Bowl if they took Aaron Rodgers.
Okay, I've thought about this long and hard. I don't know if they win a Super Bowl. And the reason why I say that is because, look, he could have got hurt too. Alex got destroyed behind a horrible offensive line and a revolving door of offensive coordinators. I believe Aaron still would have been really good. Would he be this same version of Aaron? No. I think it would have been different. Just like I think Joe Montana would have been good, but not as great as Joe Montana became if he went to the Cardinals. You know, like, just hypothetically. The Niners had the offensive coordinator who ended up being the head coach, Mike McCarthy. He was the offensive coordinator year one for Alex Smith, and he left and became the Green Bay head coach. So they might have had a revolving door of coordinators. Maybe he gets injured. He would have been better than Alex. I don't know if they would have won a Super Bowl. And then when they played head-to-head in the playoffs, the Niners owned Aaron Rodgers.
They did, but he obviously got over earlier on in his career.
Yes. 2009 or 2010?
2010.
Yeah.
Yeah, they ended up being the Steelers. But the thing is, if you have Aaron Rodgers, and I'm assuming that he sticks around with the Niners through thick and thin for a long time, when you eventually get to the place where you can compete, like, that's just the difference. And I know that Kaepernick was a whirlwind for about a year and a half as well, but to me, that's the biggest, like, I guess, what if that I think about in regards to that draft. Do the Niners have a Super Bowl or not if they make the correct decision as we now know it? I think they do. And some people may feel differently. I completely understand why. I think it's also fair to question that if he had been able to stick through thick and thin, would he have vibed with Jim Harbaugh? Like, would he have been able to work with him? Or would Harbaugh have loved to work? I think so, but I don't know.
Well, I don't even think you get to Harbaugh. I think about this all the time. Had you drafted Aaron Rodgers, does North Turner just get the job? Because North Turner became the offensive coordinator for the Niners, and he ended up leaving to be a head coach, I believe, in San Diego at the time, late in the process. Maybe he doesn't leave, because that was a great year for Alex in terms of his development. The following year, 07 or 06, whatever it was, 06, with Frank Gore having 1,700 yards. Like, who knows? Maybe Pete Carroll, instead of wanting to stay at USC, leaves and comes to you instead of Seattle. And you don't even get the chance to hire Mike Singletary, right? Like,
that's fair.
I think about all those things. But look, let's say, had you had Harbaugh and Alex Smith and that roster?
Or Rodgers, yeah. I mean, Lord. Yeah, Lord, there's a lot of what-ifs. All right, let's move on to the next side of the bracket. So, again, best Bay Area sports topics of the 21st century, rolling them out all week this week. Getting in for Spadoni with Shasky. We talked about our Jimmy and Brock elite quarterbacks. We discussed the Barry Zito contract, Alex Smith or Aaron Rodgers. And this is the one I want to spend some time on. It's the Kevin Durant saga.
What part?
All of it. Because it's from the time he gets here to the time he ends, and it feels like there's some meat that's still left on the bone. And I do want to bring in the Scottie Scheffler sound in a moment because it pertains to this conversation. But if I say Kevin Durant, Golden State, what do you think of? Like, why is it one of the best sport topics of the last 25 years?
I think just Kevin Durant, right? Like, there are some guys who's just, like, synonymous with just drama, you know? I think Draymond Green, just by himself, could have been on this list. Just Draymond. That's how crazy he is to the landscape of media in this particular market. Kevin Durant losing to the Warriors 3-1 and then subsequently losing to the Cavs. Like, there's that whole thing. What if KD had just beaten them? Does he come? I don't even know.
Then probably him, not.
Him choosing to come here and the domino effect of that. That was wild. I'll never forget that. Kevin Durant chose to come to the Golden State Warriors. It's a sentence I never thought would ever be able to happen. Maybe the best free agent outside of LeBron James in the history of the NBA choosing to go to your place to win titles. Yeah, I couldn't have fathomed that as a 15-year-old.
I was hiking in the Three Sisters Mountain Range in Oregon on July 4th on Independence Day. Had a day off, took a day trip down right outside of Bend, and we're hiking, and we get back because there's no cell service. So we get back, and everyone's phones blow up at the same time. There's like four of us. We're all getting in the car, and everyone says, oh, my God. A couple of them are Warriors fans. I am. And then another friend, he's a Trailblazers fan, so he was pissed. But everyone gets the news at the same time, and just in the middle of the mountain range, everyone erupts. Like, nobody can hear us. It's traveling.
Insane.
It's falling on deaf ears and trees. But it was one of the biggest things that I can remember in sports. And I wasn't even in the Bay Area. I can't imagine what it was like here.
I was up the Russian River when the news broke, and I didn't believe it. I kept refreshing my feed, and I was like, this is not real. There's no way this is real. I didn't believe it, and I'll never forget. My buddy Rocco called me. I told you he was coming, because my buddy Rocco was
on it.
Convinced. No, he was convinced during the regular season he was going to come to us. Mm. I got to give Rocco credit. And then I watched the saga locally and nationally turn from, I can't believe KD went there, to KD ruined the NBA. What?
No, it's true. That's what people were saying. He ruined basketball.
He ruined the NBA. And then there's the whole circus of the Warriors. I believe they lost game one to the Rockets, like, by a lot. The first ever game KD wore. They looked that up. I think they lost like 20 or 30, and Harden went off. But they ended up having an unbelievable year. They win the championship. He hits the shot in LeBron's face that time has kind of forgotten, but it was an incredible shot in their face.
Game three, yeah.
I mean, that team could have went undefeated in the playoffs.
Absolutely. It's perhaps one of the greatest teams, if not the greatest teams ever assembled. And then it's always in that conversation.
You get the sense, even after year one, like, not only he ruined the NBA, but, like, he was not happy, even though he had reached the pinnacle of what was supposed to be the sport, his career, his athletic heights. And it felt like, to a lot of people, it wasn't satisfactory enough for him, or maybe he thought it would be, he would be praised more. And the whole thing felt very underwhelming to, I think, people that follow the Warriors, people around Kevin Durant, Kevin Durant himself. It was just bizarre right away.
Well, to me, that, like, that's what puts it in the stratosphere of best Bay Area sports topics of the last 25 years. The person that seems unfulfilled, the person that seems unsatisfied, the person that ostensibly has it all and still is left kind of wanting. And that's where Scottie Scheffler comes in. So for those that don't know, Scottie Scheffler, best golfer in the world, consensus. And he was asked during his recent press conference, right before the U.S. Open, or the Open, sorry, about what the process is like for him. Just what he goes through to get himself into a mind state of winning, and really how fulfilling each championship is and has been for him. So it's about 2.5 minutes, but to me, it's a look into not just the best of the best, but also can kind of take us into what Kevin Durant may have been feeling and whether or not it's fair or foul. So here's Scottie Scheffler. This was from yesterday.
It feels like you work your whole life to celebrate winning a tournament for like a few minutes. It only lasts a few minutes, that kind of euphoric feeling. And I, like, to win the Byron Nelson Championship at home, I literally worked my entire life to become good at golf, to have an opportunity to win that tournament. And you win it, you celebrate, get to hug my family, my sister's there. It's such an amazing moment. And then it's like, okay, now what are we going to eat for dinner? You know, life goes on. Is it great to be able to win tournaments and to accomplish the things I have in the game of golf? Yeah. I mean, it brings tears to my eyes just to think about, because it's literally worked my entire life to become good at this sport, and to have that kind of sense of accomplishment, I think, is a pretty cool feeling. You know, to get to live out your dreams is very special. But at the end of the day, it's like, I'm not out here to inspire the next generation of golfers. I'm not here to inspire somebody else to be the best player in the world, because what's the point? You know, this is not a fulfilling life. It's fulfilling from the sense of accomplishment, but it's not fulfilling from a sense of like the deepest, you know, places of your heart. You know, there's a lot of people that make it to what they thought was going to fulfill them in life, and then you get there and all of a sudden you get to number one in the world, and then they're like, what's the point? And you know, I really do believe that, because you know, what is the point? You're like, why do I want to win this tournament so bad? That's something that I wrestle with on a daily basis. It's like showing up at the Masters every year, it's like, why do I want to win this golf tournament so badly? Why do I want to win the Open Championship so badly? I don't know. Because if I win, it's going to be awesome for about 2 minutes. And then we're going to get to the next week, and it's going to be like, hey, you won 2 majors this year. How important is it for you to win the FedEx Cup playoffs? And it's just like, we're back here again, you know? So we really do. We work so hard for such little moments. And, you know, I'm kind of a sicko. I love putting in the work. I love being able to practice. I love getting out to live out my dreams. But at the end of the day, sometimes I just don't understand the point. You know, because I don't know if I'm making any sense or not, but am I not? it's just one of those deals. You know, I love the challenge. I love being able to play this game for a living. It's one of the greatest joys of my life. But does it fill the deepest, you know, wants and desires of my heart? Absolutely not.
I think it's one of the most relatable things I've ever heard.
I mean, it's a stream of consciousness for sure. But I think it, first of all, I do wonder why he was just so inviting. Like, that was one of the more honest, deep answers to a simple question that I've ever heard. Especially from someone who is, again, he's the number one golfer in the world. He is the best player in his sport. He is the, I don't know, Nikola Jokic of golf or whatever. The point is, he's talking about being all of that and being in love with, like, the grind of it. Just for like that 2 minute moment of satisfaction. And that's something that anybody would love to get to the peak of their profession. Like Jannik Sinner just won Wimbledon. He hadn't beaten Carlos Alcaraz in a final at all in his career. In fact, it just blew a 2-set lead to him. And he gets to the pinnacle of his career. And he's got to go turn around in a month and go play at another major. Like, you don't get to enjoy it, because when you're that good, it's just expected of you to remain in that place. And that's why, to bring it to Durant, when I hear Scottie Scheffler talking about it, I kind of hear Durant. in a different way, though. Like, I hear somebody who is as in love with the work it takes to be great as it is the actual fulfillment itself of winning a title.
I also think that when KD finally got to what he deemed to be this unattainable, you know, thing that he had been striving for, he looked around and was like, is this all there is?
Well, that's the difference. Like, Scheffler seems like he's at peace with that.
Exactly.
Or Durant, for whatever reason, is not.
Yeah, and I think that, I don't know if you've ever heard Steve Young talk about this story, but it's one of my favorites. Steve had lost two times in a row to the Dallas Cowboys in the NFC Championship game. And he was the big reason why. I mean, he underperformed. The team wasn't as good, but he underperformed. He wasn't a great playoff performer. And he finally ended up winning the Super Bowl in 1994, January 95. And he said they got back, and everybody had been partying, having a great time. And it's clean out your lockers, first day back, you know? And he comes in, and Steve says he's walking around the facility, and he sees somebody running routes on the field. Now, they had just won the Super Bowl. And he's looking out the window, and he says to one of the security guards, "Who's out there?" He goes, "Oh, that's Jerry Rice." So what is Jerry doing? He's getting ready for next year. And Steve just could not understand it. He's like, "We just won the Super Bowl, and Jerry's out there the next day getting ready for the next season." And that's the difference between Jerry Rice and everyone else, right? Yeah. And I think that there are certain individuals who are tortured. And, you know, I don't want to turn this into myself. I don't. But I think it's very relatable to me because I'm obsessed with the what's next, what's next, what's next. And I think that's the ADD in me. And when I work so hard to get a full-time shift, a slot here, I work so hard to get it. Every weekend shift, every night shift, working three jobs at the expense of my family. Not seeing my wife, not seeing anyone. And I finally got the job. And we weren't really like winning. And then we finally won 1 month. And it was during the COVID time. And I was miserable. It's like I couldn't even enjoy winning a month. And I'm not trying to put that on the same as winning a Byron Nelson or a Super Bowl or any of those things. But I do relate to the sense of you work so hard to do something, then you finally do it. And you're like, no, I have to do it again and again and again and again and again. And you can't even appreciate what you just did. You can't even enjoy it. And there's a lot of people in work and in different life settings, whether it's sports or not, who are like this. There's a lot of people that are like this.
Yeah, and look, I hear people, like, for example, the Boxer and Gerson work injury attorney's text line for the 408, Scotty, first world problems from the 510. The point is, you make a lot of money that 99% of the people in the world can't even dream about. Yes, that's all true. There's no doubt that he lives in a different realm, both financially and in terms of his sport than we do. But I think what he's talking about is the same that everyone feels. It's a, like, what are you playing for? That's the question. And all he's doing is admitting that sometimes he doesn't know. He doesn't know what he's playing for. He's playing to win, obviously, but when that's not enough, what do you keep playing for? Like, Francisco Lindor was asked kind of a similar question during his press availability yesterday at the MLB All-Star Game, and someone asked him, like, what keeps you motivated? And he says, it's not motivation, it's discipline.
He's right.
Like, motivation isn't good enough. Like, I know that everyone wants to believe that there's some, like, miracle speech that you're going to give yourself every time you go out there and compete, but it's not. It's the discipline to be at your best when you're not feeling great, because you're going to go through those ups and downs. Scheffler hits bad shots. Durant has bad games. Curry has bad games. But in my opinion, what separates, we'll look at Curry and Scheffler, I think they're more in the same sphere. Like, it's the discipline that they have from all the crap that we don't see from behind the scenes to remain great in those moments when motivation isn't enough. That's what I hear him talking about. So the first world problems is it's fine. Like, I know people maybe are like, wow, well, what's he complaining about? He's complaining about the fact that, actually, I don't even know what's complaining.
He's tortured.
He's vocalizing, yes, his torture.
He's tortured, and to a degree. I think Kobe suffered from this to a degree. I think Kobe was maniacally obsessed with the process of winning. I think Pat Riley is this way. He's an NBA lifer. Jerry West was this way. I think there are a lot of people. I call them competitionaholics. John Lynch, I think, is this way, where once their careers are over, how do you fill that void? You see this with a lot of different people in a lot of different walks of life. I think, you know, there are certain movie actors that suffer from this. Just because you're making a lot of money doesn't mean that you can't have mental illness. You know, I don't know if anyone, you have never gone through this, but like Carter, you went through the wedding process. There's a reason they call it like, you know, post-marriage depression.
Hell.
Right? And it's like you plan and plan and plan and plan. Not all men or not all women, but there are certain couples that go through this whole like build up to the wedding day. Okay. And oh my God. And you exert so much energy and then you have the wedding day and it's over. And it's done. And then they literally get depressed. Same thing happens with childbirth. You see this a lot with women in childbirth. And so, like, I think we build these things up, and then they happen, and then they pass, and then you're like, well, now what? I actually think this is really relatable.
Well, and that's why when, like, I get that someone like Durant seems unsatisfied, but, or Scheffler might come off, he sounds, like, ungrateful for the God-given gifts that he has, basically. But I appreciate the honesty. Like when these guys talk about what they go through, I have no clue. I will never know. And to me, hearing these guys be human at least feels like I can relate to them a little bit. Like just a smidgen.
Well, here's where I will have some nuance here. I do believe that in society, we all have this financial envy, just in general, right? These guys are making millions of dollars.
Salesforce Tower right down the block.
Right? Like, it just, we all do. We all have envy of people making lots of money. I mean, I'm jealous of Marlon, man, being able to do whatever he wants, whenever he wants. Money doesn't make you happy. We've seen this how many different times in how many different industries, whether it's Pablo Sandoval chasing money in Boston, being professionally and personally unfulfilled. You see this all over the place. That being said, I do believe that when you hear Kevin Durant and Scottie Scheffler talk about, well, what's the point of all this and everything? Athletes from yesteryear couldn't afford to not keep grinding financially to feed their families. Right. So there's an element of the motivation of continuing to grind like a normal person would, like you and I have to. I have to keep working for me and my wife and my son and my family. You know, that's one of the many motivations for me. And it's probably my primary one. Once you've reached a certain financial status, that element and that fear kind of does go away, you know, and then you have the question of, well, how much are you willing to sacrifice of your family at the expense of chasing your athletic dreams? See Tiger Woods, see Tom Brady, right? I think those guys sacrificed a lot of their family dynamic for their own individual greatness. I think you have to be some level of selfish.
Yeah, I'm not asking people to feel sorry for them. I thought it was one of the first times that I heard someone speak on this in just like completely honest stream of consciousness. And yeah, he talked a little backwards on himself, but I appreciate that. You know, anybody who gets to the podium and answers a question honestly, I think they're gonna get my respect because they don't have to do that. Someone could have asked him, what motivates you? He says, well, you know, I'm pretty good, and you know, I just want to go out here and try hard. Like, he could have dodged a question the way that we heard and have heard so many athletes do. But the thing about it is, yeah, like, we're never going to be able to understand them, but for someone like Scottie Scheffler to talk like he is one of us, for some people, that makes them angry because he ain't one of us. He's got millions of dollars. He's the best at his profession. He doesn't have to work for a living. He retired today.
I mean, if he stops right now, he's going straight to the Hall of Fame for golf.
However, I appreciate that he still has some touch of like reality for other people.
Well, he also
and that's
has
what he's talking about.
He also has a young child, which I believe he got born in the last year.
Like, Scottie Scheffler and I are the same age. I guess, like, I harbor those thoughts in a far more minimalistic sense, but I have those thoughts as well.
Well, I do think, though, his life has changed a lot in the last year, year and a half. Again, when you have a child and
oh, yeah,
you're married and stuff, like, your algorithm does shift. Who I was at 27 is not who I am at 42. You know, and the things that life does to you, your experiences, you know, getting married, not married. I truly believe Aaron Rodgers, there is a part of Aaron Rodgers being the center of his own universe and why he's so out of touch is like the dude alienated from his own family, now he says he's married. We're not even sure if that person exists, doesn't have any kids. Like, I think there's an element of we all have a friend like this, like, dude, you're able to do whatever you want, whenever you want. Like, you become very selfish. And I'm not saying that's a negative thing. I'm just saying, like, it's different when you have to put others first.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I don't know. To me, it bled into one of our sports topics of the 21st century, which is the KD saga, because there is some similarities. And I just thought it was a fascinating couple of minutes. So I appreciate everybody both that didn't enjoy that did for listening to it with us. All right. It's time to get to our Fast Five. All right, our Fast Five. Now, does Joe usually lead off, or how do you guys do this roundabout?
I don't know if you know this. I do whatever I want, like Cartman. I do
like
whatever
Marlins
I want.
Man?
Look, man, Kevin Durant. We didn't even get to the where he's clapping at Draymond. We didn't even get to him, the sit-down with Draymond afterwards, blaming Bob Myers. The Kevin Durant saga is just an all-timer. But that's not my final thought.
All right.
Tom Verducci. I mean, this guy. Tom Verducci. I knew I was done with him when he had a quill pen and he was dipping it in ink as he was autographing his name on the Hall of Fame ballot. That guy is one of the most condescending, pompous journalists on the planet. You want to know why the average Joe rolls their eyes at journalism? It's because of people like Tom Verducci. Get him off my television. He can write. He can do whatever he wants over here to the side. I don't want him talking on my television during sporting events. Tom Verducci, if I rolled a bucket of balls out and said, hey, go coach the 10U team, he would have no idea where to start. But if it was penning a soliloquy on why Bonds shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame with his pen quill from his throne telling others how to live their life, he would be the first person there. I have zero desire to see anything Tom Verducci related on my television set ever again. Fox, it's my only issue with last night's broadcast. I want nothing to do with Tom Verducci moving forward. Get him off my TV.
That's fair. All right, I'll go next. I got to give a shout out to Brad Pitt. I'm not going to lie. So I see a lot of movies. I love going to the films. I saw F1 last week, and it's one of the best sport movies I've seen in recent memory.
Really?
It's really, really good. And I was starting to think about Brad Pitt. This guy has been an A-list actor now for like 40 years. I mean, seriously.
I mean, the face still looks, for a reason we know,
yeah, I mean,
still looks like he's in his 20s.
He's Picasso, but he's got an Oscar.
A chiseled
he's
like
now
one.
In the redemption phase after Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. He's gotten into the 2020s now. And F1 is not his crowning achievement, but it's one of the better sports movies that I've seen, and I would suggest that people go check it out, whether it's on at home on your big screen or even in the theaters. F1
I'm gonna have to check
was
that out.
Fantastic. So
what is
Brad
your favorite
Pitt,
sports movie?
My favorite sports movie of all time is Bull Durham.
Really?
Yeah, love Bull Durham. Bull Durham is one of the more, I think, the combination of romance, of baseball action, of storytelling. I also worked in the minor leagues for like 5 years, so I love those kinds of just ridiculous stories that are all told. And Kevin Costner's a classic.
Well, I love Kevin Costner. Field of Dreams, Sandlot, 42.
Love of the Game.
The Natural.
The Natural's a good one.
Draft Day.
Above the Rim, even though it's really not a sports movie, but it is.
Like Mike.
I've got so many. The Longest Yard. Like Mike. Get out of here, dude.
Come on, dude.
I used to love that movie.
Have some respect.
Cool Runnings. Classic.
Classic.
Classic. There's so many. Caddyshack. I mean, I can't.
Caddyshack's great.
Man. But F1, I got to go see, huh?
F1's really good. Shout out Brad Pitt.
Yeah, everyone was saying that LJ was dressed like an F1 racer in this particular jumper outfit that I had him in the other day, the Jordan jumper.
That one's nice.
Yeah, isn't it good?
What do you got, guys?
Carter?
My final thought of the day is I'm going to call out some good friends of mine who are some dudes I really, really love to the bottom of me. But what is up with your guys' take? Bonte and Goo, you guys didn't like that swing off last night? I'm just in shock by it. I have to say, I was so compelled last night. It was just must-watch TV for me. And as far as All-Star games go, I mean, that was just right below the Four Nations face-off to me, I think. And I'm the biggest NBA NFL fan here, and I was incredible to me, man.
Guru
did not like it.
Apparently not. Well, he'll be in here in about 5 minutes. Pasta, what do you got today?
Yeah, just real quick, for anybody that did not catch the interview with Marlins Man, you have to go watch it. It's on the Morning Roast podcast page. It's going to be on YouTube pretty soon. And it got me thinking, there's so many people that are not affiliated with an organization. They're not players, coaches, executives, whatever, that have stories that we just don't know, like this guy. And I think it's good that we kind of got his story out there, and he's just, that was an incredible interview.
As long as Tom Verducci isn't telling the story, I think we're...
Great writer.
Yeah, we could...
Okay, that doesn't make great television.
Oh, man.
Like, you know? I mean, come on.
I got you. Well, on that note, thanks for letting me hang out with you guys today. Spadoni's going to be back tomorrow, and I look forward to hearing what you guys got coming up the rest of the week.
Let me get my quill pen and dip it in ink and sign my Hall of Fame ballot. Guy's such a dork.
That'll do it for Shasky. Spadoni's going to be back tomorrow. Thanks for letting me, Evan Giddings, fill in here today. What's coming up next on the game is Steiny and Guru, but that was Fast Five brought to you by Xfinity. At home or on the go, you get the fastest internet to all your devices. Steiny, Guru is coming up next, brought to you by Fremont Bank, here for you, here for good.